Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Productivity Talk Radio. Here is your host, Carol Dixon Carr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Productivity Talk, where I interview experts about their perspectives on productivity, business communication, and process improvement so your business can increase your bottom line profits. Today, the subject is leadership, which plays perfectly into effective business communication. If you're not leading your team, whether it's a small or large virtual or face-to-face team, whether you're an entrepreneur or a small business, large business, your productivity and profitability will be hindered if you're not leading your team. The stakes are even higher when you look at the bigger companies who use Six Sigma as a process improvement tool. That's a very intricate, very involved process, so you really need good leadership in that arena. So I don't think anybody's immune. So, and even not even 2 hours ago, I was just explaining to my econ students today about some of the reasons why diseconomies of scale exist, and poor leadership was among the contributing factors. The way people define leadership, in my experience, has varied quite a bit depending on one's values, mission, purpose, personality, frameworks, the list goes on. And really, truthfully, I can only venture to guess how my guest expert, Juan Hudson, views leadership based on my interactions with him, which I'm sure is really great, and I can't wait to hear what he's got to say. But I'm not going to speculate. I thought it would be best to bring him to the show to talk about it. And I was really intrigued when he mentioned in passing while we were having a conversation a week or two ago about this concept of tying together influence, elegance, and leadership. And I thought, ooh, what's that? And then, of course, out loud, I said, hey, would you like to talk about that on my show so I can find out what you mean? And, of course, obviously, he said yes. So let me tell you a little bit about Juan Hudson. He is an author, radio talk show host, CNNLP, I'm thinking that's Certified Master Neurolinguistic Programmer, I hope I got that right, business growth strategist and strategic influence trainer and coach. He has had the privilege of training salespeople at companies such as Coldwell Banker, Dean Witter, New York Life, Cellular One, Lexus, and numerous others. He's also taught and used his marketing, copywriting, selling, and negotiating skills on behalf of some pretty heavy hitters like Jay Abraham, Tony Robbins, J. Conrad Levinson, Les Brown Jr., Dr. John Gray, and just a lot of all kinds of cool people, small, medium companies, and so on. So welcome to the show, Ron. It's really an honor to have you here.
I'm thrilled. Thank you for inviting me. I'm so happy to be here.
Cool. Now, before we get into the topic for today, why don't you share for the people who might be listening later, because I think the folks who are here right now I think might know who you are, but for the listeners who might be listening later, can you share with them how you got into using NLP in business? Maybe even explain a little bit about what it is, because a lot of the people who listen to the show are in, you know, just strict process improvement and you know, just bottom line, you know, hardcore stuff. So NLP might seem a little fuzzy to the Six Sigma professionals, but maybe not. So tell us how it helped you in your business and how it helped your clients.
Oh, so, well, first let me tell you how I got started in with using neurolinguistics programming, and you were correct in saying that the CM is Certified Master. It's actually Certified Master Practitioner of Neurolinguistics Programming,
okay, cool.
More popularly known as NLP. What happened is I was working in corporate America in the late 80s, early 90s, and as a result of just, you know, being someone who's been very curious in human psychology and human behavior and, you know, really the having that continual question of why do people do the things they do? Why do I behave the way I behave? You know, why do I do things that I do? I started, I was continuing the pursuit of really what I consider profound knowledge in the areas in the area of human psychology and human behavior. And then I came across the science of neurolinguistics programming as a result of reading Tony Robbins' book, Unlimited Power, which I'm sure everyone has heard of it. If they haven't, I'd be really, really surprised considering it sold millions, or at least a million copies, if I'm not mistaken, worldwide. But I was dealing with some frustrations in the position that I was in at the time. I was actually working as a staff accountant, if you can believe that, in corporate America at a savings and loan back when, you know, savings and loans were really headed for some big problems. And this particular SNL that I worked at ended up being taken over by the RTC. But before that, when the bank was doing really well, I became extremely bored with the job that I was doing, sitting in a cubicle, punching on the 10 key and looking at a computer for most of the day. I was, and still am, a fairly sociable person, as I think you know, and other people who know me know that I'm a pretty sociable person. So, but that job limited me in that area. However, what I started doing is looking for ways to turn that around. And I came across this book one day while at the one of the bookstores out there. I can't remember which one on the East Coast. This was when I was living in D.C. And I saw this book, Unlimited Power. And one of the things on the back it mentions is, you know, becoming more persuasive and building rapport with people in an instant and communicating in a way that really you are really helping other people. Get what they want so that you can get what you want. Really, and that's what in part my pursuit was, is I wanted to become better in my ability to communicate, better in my ability to persuade and influence people, not to do things for my reasons, but to do them for theirs. And mm-hmm. In that book, as I've said to people who have asked me about Tony's book, Unlimited Power, I've said many times that book is more or less probably a beginner's course for NLP practitioners. And I highly recommend it for anyone who's interested in learning more about NLP. But in that book, I learned some very specific techniques, tools for communicating, especially in situations where I was beginning having some conflicts. Right? I mean, there was this one young lady who came to work at the bank who we butted heads big time. She was, and I didn't notice before I started reading the book, but she was very visual, which means she talked really fast. She used her hands. She used very visual language, and she was very descriptive in her language. And I was more auditory, which means that I just simply use a lot of auditory words like, you know, this really resonates with me, this clicks, this, that rings a bell, those types of things, where she would be like, well, I really, you know, I can't see how that's going to work. And so it did not help that in addition to us having those two different communication styles, she was also very strong-willed, and so was I. So we butted heads big time. I mean, at one point there was a situation where I thought if the conversation had continued, because we started getting loud with each other, and I was like, okay, wait, we need to stop. And eventually she went back to her cubicle, and I was in mine. But we were just continually butting heads. And then as I was going back through Unlimited Power, or I was still in the process of reading it, because it's like almost a 400-page book, you know, so there's a lot of material there. And so I went to particular chapters within the book, and one of the chapters in the book, in that book, is called The Distinctions of Excellence, and it's talking about this topic of metaprograms. And metaprograms simply are filters that we have that cause us to filter information coming in or communication coming in a certain way. So, for example, you know, Allison, like I said, we both have very strong, strong will, strong internal frame, what is called internal frame of reference. Mm-hmm. Under the metaprograms, and there's some 60 metaprograms, and I'll probably only be able to cover about possibly three or four of them. But we both had a strong internal frame of reference. So, and what that means is, and I think everyone listening probably already knows what that means, is really, you know, I had my opinion about the way things were to be done, and especially I'm training you. So this is the way it's going to be done. And in addition to, you know, being that, having that strong internal frame of reference, I'm also a high D personality. So I'm very take charge. This is the way we're going to do it. And at that time, I've continually had to really work on tempering my D. And if people don't know what that is, it's the DISC profile, and Carol is very proficient in I think, if I'm not mistaken, in administering it. You know a lot about it. You can really have some issues in your relationships as a high D personality if you don't temper those traits that generally come out of being having that going on. So anyway, we were just butting heads. So I went in and I started reading this book, reading these chapters on metaprograms, reading about the communication styles. And then so I went back like the next day or within the next couple of days of having reviewed a couple of those chapters, and I started speeding up the pace of my speech. I started using more visual words, predicates, so that I could really communicate with her in a way that so that we'd be on the same page, right? So there's a phrase that really, helps to, when you're talking to someone who's very visual and they're using visual words, and you'll recognize this after you've, everyone listening, you'll start hearing these things and in conversations as you have them today, and I actually encourage you to do it, is to pay attention to the words that people are using during the conversations with you, because they are really giving you insight as to how you will be able to have a better relationship with them. And at the core, or really the basis of influence, the foundational key to influence is all about rapport. So that was my motivation with Allison, is I wanted to have rapport so that I could have influence, right? Because I did not have the influence that I wanted. I was certainly influencing her, and in that we were both turning each other off big time, for lack of a better way to describe it. We had serious conflict, and it had to be stopped. So, being someone who cares about people, who cares about more, and even, that time, obviously, I also cared about my job, because it was what I was supposed to do, was train her. And so I started utilizing the language to communicate. When I started speeding up the pace of my speech, I started, just talking to her in a way that it really got us on the same page. It helped us to see things from her perspective as opposed to, things resonating with her. And again, that's an auditory word. It's something that, when people are in communication with each other, they will use words that will give you a clue as to how to communicate with them more effectively. So I just continually did that, and I saw a dramatic change in our relationship. I mean, to the point that she invited me to her wedding, invited me to parties, we were hanging out, we got to know each other, we grew to really respect and like each other. And that happened at a very rapid pace. I'm not talking, it took me months to do that. That happened within the 24 to 48 hours after I started using those tools with her. So, NLP is described in many different ways to answer other part of the question is, and that is, what is NLP? NLP, one of the ways that it's described is it is the study of human excellence. And so what that means is when you find someone who's excellent at what they do, you can duplicate that. Booker T. Washington said that success leaves footprints. So NLP certainly believes what Booker T. Washington said, and that we can find, if I find that you are excellent at doing something, then I will want to model you, so because I want to get the same result. So the best thing for me to do, if there are certain results that you're wanting to achieve in your business and your relationships, and this is about leadership, right? If you want to achieve certain results or outcomes or goals as a leader, then it's very important for you to understand the concept of modeling, and that there are certain ways that you communicate with people that are certainly not going to get you to where you want to. And I think that's why some of the people are listening to the show today, is because they are either experiencing some issues in this area, or they are just looking to take their skills to another level. So it's important to find someone who has the best strategies for doing exactly that, and that is getting the result that you want. And so let me give you some keys that are things that you want to look for, and that is, or find out about, is, you know, what are their beliefs about leadership? You know, what are their beliefs about, more importantly, about relationships with people? And what we've discovered is that people who are what I call elegantly influential leaders is that
now,
they...
Sorry to interrupt you. So are we going into the definition of influential elegance now? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Please interrupt me because I can obviously run my mouth and let me... I'll slow down.
I wanted to know the answer definitively and explicitly. What is influential elegance? So that's why I kind of pounced on you for a second.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Really what it is when someone is elegantly influential, they are able to get people to do things for their reasons and not, you know, their for their own reasons and not theirs. In other words, if I'm the leader in the organization and I want you to do something, I'm going to find out what the reasons are that you would do it, as opposed to just saying, here's the way I want it done, and here's the way you're going to do it. That is old school and, you know, way of leadership, and that it almost, especially if it includes intimidation, because many years ago, as you know, Carol, that more than likely is that, you know, a lot of people led that way. You know, you're going to do it this way. I pay you to do it this way. Do it.
Yeah.
And so, but the elegantly influential leader really looks to work with people to create an environment where people are comfortable, where they're happy, where they're fulfilled, and they enjoy working with you. And that requires for us to be sincerely interested and care about people. That's a big part of this, is regardless of all the techniques and tools, if you don't care about people, this isn't going to work, because they'll realize that you're just using some technique you just learned, because they know that you don't really care about them. So first and foremost, you know, we want elegantly influential leaders care about people. It's real. It's not fake. And you can't, in my opinion, and I've been told this, is that you cannot fake sincerity. People pick up on it. Yeah, it's just not something that you can fake. So in dealing with people, caring about them first and foremost is what's going to allow you to really have that elegant level of influence with them. Because once they sense that you care about them, that is key to your influence, key to you having rapport with them. Because there's, you know, two levels of rapport. One is that level of responsiveness, but you know, people can totally dislike you and be responding to what you have to
right,
say. They could be cussing you up one side and down the other. That, to me, that's one level of rapport, but that's certainly not the type of rapport that we're talking, that
right.
I'm wanting for people to accomplish with others. But the ideal level of influence, or excuse me, rapport that we want to have with someone is that they trust us. So if they believe
right.
we care about them, they trust us. And
exactly.
that is... at the core of rapport in the mind of an elegantly influential leader. So I've already given some idea or techniques, if you will, as to how to create that rapport
mm-hmm.
so that you're able to have that influence. Did you ask me another part of the question? I want to make sure that I covered. Did
yeah,
I answer
which?
Let's
go ahead. Look in- room and see. Karen had a question.
Okay.
I don't know if you're in the chat room, but she asked, could one model someone else's excellence without their own talent?
Could someone model someone else's own excellence without their own talent?
Yeah, I might not have read it. But can one model someone else's excellence without their own talent? I don't know if...
Well, it depends on what we're talking about. Let me say this, that in neuro-linguistics program, or NLP, if we know Michael, everyone knows who Michael Jordan is. Absolutely one of the most phenomenal basketball players in the history of basketball. Michael Jordan has certain beliefs that have allowed him to achieve the success that he did in as a basketball player. Michael also has certain strategies. And when I say strategies, I'm talking about mental strategy. There are ways that he's thinking about what he's doing that allow him to get the results that he gets. And there's an order in which he has those strategies organized. More than likely, he's not conscious of it, but that's what, you know, fortunately, we would be able to do if I was wanting to model Michael Jordan. Now, here's the deal, is once I have the beliefs, once I have his mental strategy, I know how he's executing it, and I also model his physiological strategy in that here's how you dribble the ball, here's how you post up, here's how you drive the lane. Here's, you know, those. Once I learn those other parts of how to do what he does, then it's going to take some time for me to build up my skill level to where he is. So there's in relationship to athletics, that certainly applies, and certain areas of business. There are certain things that you're going to have to do some study. I mean, you can go and model a top financial trader, in that you find out what their beliefs are, which you really have to go very deep there, and that is because it's their beliefs are very important, but all of what made up those beliefs are the things that you're going to have to learn as well. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so once you learn all of what they learn, but you also know the organizing beliefs that they have about this particular area of financial trading, and that they are, you know, they are big winners in that area, knowing what their mental strategies are and in terms of how do they evaluate an investment so that they're able to get the result that they are getting. And so they are asking and answering questions in a certain way based on those beliefs. So then after you, again, get the beliefs, the strategies, and the order in which they execute, there's that time frame that certainly you will spend getting to that skill level. So, it depends on what area that you're modeling. But I think, well, let me ask, you know, in describing that process to you, in your opinion, if you followed that process, would it save you time over going through, you know, reading a book by, you know, without having access to the person who wrote it?
Right.
Right. So really, you know, it's great to have a book because you'll get their beliefs and possibly some of their strategies. But if you can have if you're learning how to fly an airplane, you read a book to learn how to do it, I can guarantee you'll feel much more confident if you have the author of that book there in the cockpit with you when you're getting ready to take off. So that's very important to the whole modeling process. And Karen, did I answer your question? That
like you did, she says it looks like okay. It looks like it. Yes, it's about belief, raw talent, and skills. Yeah, cool.
Okay, great.
So, we actually have somebody on the line. I don't know if the person who's dialed in has a question or if they've just dialed in, but I'm going to unmute and see if they do want to make a comment or question just for a second here. Hang on just a sec. Area code 713, did you have a question or comment, or are you just listening in? I think I got my answer. Okay, I think they're just listening in. All right, back on mute, you know. All right, so let's take an example. Let's start with the entrepreneur. Suppose an entrepreneur wanted to, this is a scenario, an entrepreneur wanted to assemble a virtual team, and I've often believed that, you know, your mission, purpose, values, especially values, need to be in alignment when you're putting your team together for the first time. So what are some of the things that you might look for as you're assembling, say, especially if you're a small business, you might have a webmaster, you might have an accountant, a bookkeeper, maybe an affiliate manager if you do a lot of selling eventful products and so on. What kind of things would you look for under the guise of influential elegance and leadership?
The types of there are certain questions that I would ask someone that I'm about to bring on board. One of the things that you've actually touched on a couple of times, and that is finding out someone's values is very, very, very important in being in alignment. In addition to that, it's also finding out their rules for or their criteria for those values being met. Because I can say to you that, you know, love is my most important value. Well, you know, what if your rule for feeling loved is I have to call you every single hour on the hour, no matter where I am? And I don't know that. If that is a value, if that's the criteria so that you would feel loved by me, or you feel loved by me as your employer, you know, and that's unusual, but you feel cared, let's use the word cared for, or the phrase cared for. In order for you to feel cared for me by you, by me as an employer, then I want to find out what is that? What has to happen in order for you to feel that way? Or have you ever worked with someone and you really felt like they cared about you? So asking that type of question will get out what their criteria is for feeling like you care about them. And sometimes people are not conscious of that until you ask them that type of question. And then you have to give them time to process that question, because it's in their other than conscious mind. They're not, people are not generally walking around aware at all of what their rules are or their criteria is for feeling certain emotions. They just, for the most part, go throughout their day experiencing the more life more like this. Okay, I don't like that you just said that, how you said that to me. Right? I don't like your tone. I don't like the way you're looking at me, or I can't believe you just went and talked to that person without talking to me first. So you end up finding out those rules or the criteria so that person will feel a certain way, sometimes and probably most of the time by accident, which is really a challenge. You know, it's a difficult way to find that out, and it can be somewhat detrimental to the relationship if you are not I'm calling an elegantly influential leader, in that if you don't care about people, if you don't, you know, you don't care whether or not they feel like you care about them, then you won't, this won't matter at all to you. But obviously everyone who's listening does have some level of caring for people. And so it's important that we find out what these rules are. And even in finding them out, I got to tell you this. I'm gonna make a big confession here live on the air. Is this the last couple? Go ahead.
The transparency is really good. I'm all for that.
even though I know this material, and I've been using it for years, I still miss it. You know, just within the last couple of weeks, and even within the last 24 to 48 hours, I've had some conflicts with some people that I'm doing, that I have a relationship with, and what happens is what I end up asking myself is one of the questions that I end up asking myself is, what am I valuing more, especially if I am not. If we're not moving forward, if we're not resolving the issue, and if I'm standing my ground, right? I'm right. I don't care what you have to say. What am I valuing more than that relationship? So once I've asked myself that question, and I'm willing to say, you know what? Right now, I'm valuing my pride more or my ego more than this relationship. Is that really what I want to do? And once I ask that question and I say, no, that's not what I want to do, this relationship is certainly more important to me. And of course, it's going to be based on what's going on. There are certain things that are absolutely unacceptable, in terms of how someone treats you. This is absolutely unacceptable. But these were things.
Right.
Pardon me?
So it's just like we talk about in the coaching world, rules, standards, and boundaries have to be established, not just in the households with the people you live with, but going back to the virtual team after doing the interview and say, it sounds like there are questions that you can ask under the NLP or influential elegance and leadership. That kind of mirrors that process. And then I think once they're on, you can find out where they are, maybe with the DISC, the MBTI, and really get a pretty good picture. I don't like to put people in boxes, but at least you have some kind of idea. Like you said, you are a high DM, high I/D myself, but you know, if you're an actualized person, you can recognize, you know, the things that might put people off about the high D, or in my case, ENTJ, same thing. Most ENTJ.
So, you're an ENTJ?
ENTJ, yeah.
I am too. Wait a minute. We talked. We tweeted about this. Okay, cool. Awesome.
Very nice. Very cool. 5% of the population. Yeah. So if you have this big pie of data, so to speak, speaking in T-speak, then it's easier to discern how people want to be talked to. And, of course, it's a universal rule. People don't care what you do until they know how much you care. I don't even remember who said that. But
I don't either.
When you were talking about you can't fake sincerity, that is so true.
Right.
So it looks like and I deliberately made this go a little bit longer than 30 minutes just in case, so just because I had a feeling since there was I wasn't sure exactly what was going to go on, so I just wanted to make sure that we got a lot of good stuff to come out. I want to see if anybody's got any questions. We've got a number of people in the room. We've got Stephanie, we've got Karen, we've got Louise. Let me scroll down. I'm just saying hi to all of you guys live.
Yeah, hi, everyone.
We've got guest 573. We got Jeanette. Indie Radio 69. Yeah, Living Smart. That's cool. I like that handle. Living Smart and Well. Hello to all of you. If there are any other questions, please feel free to share. And if not, I'm going to ask Ron to see if he'd like to provide any other extra words of wisdom before we say bye.
Okay. Well, certainly. I think, you know, as I was preparing for the call, the interview, I really was thinking through some of these things that I wanted to share. And I've already shared one that's really important, and that is finding out what someone else's criteria is for feeling a certain way. Are there rules? And then the other one that was talking about the meta programs. I started talking about that, and then I got I started talking about something else. But real quick, you know, meta programs are like, you know, when you have a key. If everyone listening, if you're sitting in front of a computer, you have a keyboard, right? And even if you're not sitting at a computer right now, you know what a keyboard looks like. And there are certain keys that you press in order to see a particular word on the screen. Well, metaprograms give you the ability to hit the right keys so that you are communicating very effectively with the people that you are leading. So let me talk real quick about internal frame of reference, which I was mentioning earlier. You know, when someone has a strong internal frame of reference, what that simply means is that they tend not to go to other people to ask them for their opinions. So I can tell you this, that I have that strong internal frame of reference, but an elegantly influential leader actually has a combination or a balance of internal and external frame of reference. And what that means is that the elegantly influential leader will listen to the input of other people. They will have their, you know, certainly they're going to have their opinion about the way things go. They may even have a really strong opinion about the way things must be. And we want leaders like that in leading us. We want those types of people. We don't want someone who isn't able to make a decision without talking to other people, but we also want them to be balanced. We want them to be willing to listen to other people who are just as intelligent, if not more intelligent, than them in a particular area. So how do you communicate with someone who has a strong internal frame of reference? They're really not listening to what you have to say. One of the best things that you can do, and this is what I did with Allison back when I was working at the SNL, is in one of the conversations that I had with her, is I would say things like, you know, I would ask her a question as opposed to telling her. Because here's the deal with someone who has a strong internal frame of reference, and this happens even more so, and people will identify with this, is you've been doing what you do in your business for many years. So you know it like the back of your hand. So when someone else comes along and they start telling you how to do things, how do you respond? So people tend to be reluctant and resistant to someone else coming in, especially someone who has that strong internal frame of reference. So how do you communicate with them? You want to talk to them about, one of the best ways that I've done it is ask questions, because questions redirect someone's focus and it helps you to really get into their experience, to get them to a point where they really are willing to hear you out. So, you know, what's a question that you can ask someone with an internal frame of reference? You might say, hey, this is something that I came across. It really made an impact in my business. I don't know if it will in yours. You'll definitely be able to make that decision on your own. If you heard what I just said, anyone who has a strong internal frame of reference, I just hit the right key for you. In order for me to have any impact with you, to stay in rapport with you and not experience resistance, it's best for me to approach you that way. Now, someone with an external frame of reference, I could say to them, hey, you know Carol Dixon Carr, right? Yeah, I do. And you know the life coach, Karen McMillan, right? Yeah, I do. You also know, right, so I'm giving – I'm utilizing what Dr. Cialdini calls social proof, which is also known as building consensus in that person's mind. These are people who you know and respect, and now I'm using them, and if you don't know me, it's really a good idea for me to pull some of those people in and then talk to you about what I'm wanting to recommend for you. That way, I'm appealing, again, pushing the right keys in order to influence you to make a decision for your reasons to do what I'm talking about, not mine. So that internal-external frame of reference is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's another metaprogram this is actually one of the most fascinating ones.
Hold that thought, Doran. We got two questions. I wanted to sneak in the question,
and
I wanted to get the website in there. And then, if we have some time, because I've got like 7 minutes remaining on my little switchboard here. Hold that thought. I'm really intrigued. So keep us, kind of panting and waiting. But we've got a question from Karen. She said, "What are some of the NLP techniques you apply to identify authenticity and increasing your transparency?"
Say it again.
What are some of the NLP techniques you apply to identify authenticity or to increase your transparency?
Well, authenticity is just like any other, let me say this, there's a way that we all have of describing a particular thing like this, and that's authenticity. When someone is being authentic, there's a way that we would describe that. So first and foremost, the NLP technique, if you will, is to ask yourself that question, or ask that whoever you're dealing with, what has to happen in order for you to feel like I'm an authentic person? Have you ever dealt with someone who you believe is really authentic? Because we all have our own references for what that means, and references are just we've all experienced someone who we believe quote unquote is authentic. So the big technique to always fall back on is asking that type of question, where you find out what does that other person believe is authentic. Because I can tell you that when this the word transparency, one day was a conversation I was having with someone probably a couple of months ago about being transparent, and their meaning for transparent was different than a lot of people. In fact, some people were kind of turned off by what that person meant. Not turned off in a bad way, just turned off like, I'm not, that's too, what's the word I'm looking for, too almost kind of soft, too soft, too weak. That seems kind of weak. No, I don't want to do that. That's not right. And that's what, so you, whenever you're hearing disagreement, you're hearing not necessarily, I wouldn't look at it as disagreement. I would look at it as an opportunity to learn from that person. What, okay, great. You don't see it as this way. How do you see it? Does that answer your question, Karen?
I wonder if she's still there. I'm looking at the chat now.
I asked the question.
Yeah. Okay, looks like it did help.
Okay,
let me get some of your contact information so I can, I was going to say tweet it. Well, we could tweet it, but you can tell on my Twitter head. Let's put your information out so I can put it in the chat so people can get a hold of you.
I'm actually signed into the chat as well, so if I'll give it to you. And
say it out loud for the audio people who are downloading this, and then also you can type it in the chat.
Okay, it's Ron underscore Hudson, Hudson.
That's the Twitter.
Right, so twitter.com/ Ron underscore Hudson, and you can also find me at howtoinfluencepeoplenow.com. There's many other places you can connect with me, but those are the two that you'll connect with me really quick.
Okay, sounds good. I just wanted to get that out there. Karen, I have another question. It was, what NLP? Ooh, what happened to my chat? Ooh, where'd it go? Oh, here we go. What NLP techniques are you using to build influential leaders? And we've got less than 3 minutes left, so keep that in mind. What NLP techniques are you using to build influential leaders?
Am I using to build influential leaders?
Yes.
I'm not. Can ask her, well, Karen, will you restate that? Because I'm not sure what exactly what you mean. Well, let me answer based on what I think you mean, and that's really educating them about the types of things that we've been talking about, and that is really giving them the awareness or making them aware of the importance of values, rules, metaprograms, and the impact that they have on the relationship, how to build rapport with people, how to recognize when you're out of rapport, how to get back into rapport, and really also becoming very, I can tell you this, that one of the most important things that are impactful things that in a relationship with people is your understanding of these rules that people have or the criteria that they have for feeling a certain way. That is mm-hmm. the biggest key, because in a conflict is all about you violated my rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to, so when someone is resistant because you've done something a certain way and they didn't like it, and if they hopefully they express it, that is an opportunity for you to really learn about them and for them to really for you to prove to them that you do care.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the key things that I've shared during this interview are the things that I teach to leaders, whether they are senior executives or even salespeople, these are tools that are, you know, across the board going to impact and positively impact the any relationship that you're having.
Good. All right. So it looks like, and I just keep thinking about just getting people to, you know, work and play well together. I think this is a good tool to use in addition to some of the things that I know that I find very helpful. And like I said, I'm a Myers-Briggs fanatic, enthusiast, expert, and so a lot of that comes into play when I look at how people communicate with one another. But when hearing the NLP, have people talk about the mirroring and watching, making sure everything is clarified, all these wonderful things that and also you have to have a level of self-awareness. Otherwise, I mean, sometimes you can't teach self-awareness if people don't want to be aware of how they're showing up. Well, maybe they shouldn't be in a leadership position in the first place. That's kind of my hardcore. I'm just thinking about some of the bosses that I've had. But, we're going to get ready to kick out, though. So. Like, we're done. So, but we're still on, but you're just not recording anymore. Wow, that was quick. Wow, that was quick. Well, I wanted to thank everybody for showing up here. And so if there aren't any other words of wisdom that you want to share with people, I guess we'll sign off and bid everybody adieu and hope everybody has a wonderful day. You still there?
Thanks for I'm sorry, did you ask?
No, I just said if you have any other extra things to share, then I was going to bid everybody adieu. And thank you for being on the show, unless you have one more, bit of, one of the last words that you'd like to share before we all go.
I think what I'd love to leave with people is just be focused on something I read in Stephen Covey's book back in mid-'80s, that his book, the first book that he wrote that sold, I don't know how many, The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. And one of the things that he talks about in that book is seeking first to understand, really seeking first to understand what's happening in a relationship with someone, whether in those times of conflict, is so important. And that's going to come from a place of you caring more about the relationship than you do about whatever rule that person may have violated, because this is a two-way street, and becoming conscious, becoming aware of what your own rules are, and also recognizing whether those rules are empowering or disempowering. And what I mean by that is you can have rules that are predicated on someone else doing certain things in order for you to feel a certain way. That is it varies based on what it is, but it can really be disempowering for you. And so I would really take that time of self-discovery and look at, not just how you can use these tools with other people, but also really take that time of self-discovery, look in the mirror and find out what are some rules that I have that may be disempowering me in my relationships. Because, for example, some people have a rule that if you don't apologize to me, I'm not going to talk to you. Or if you don't apologize to me and I do talk to you, I'm going to give you attitude until you do apologize, right? That we cannot control other people. So to me, that's a disempowering belief to have, or a rule to have, because rules are really beliefs. And they're stated in most times in the if, then, or cause effect type of verbiage, basically saying if you don't apologize, then I'm not going to talk to you. So I would really take time to become even more aware of your own criteria for, whatever the emotion may be, whatever is important to you in life, and then drilling down and looking at those areas. I really say to you that whether, and I believe we're all leaders in some form or fashion, whether it be in our homes, whether it be in a company, we're leading. You have friends and they look to you for your advice. You may not envision yourself as a leader, but I can tell you that you are, because you have influence. Anytime you open your mouth to communicate with someone, you are influencing. So the thing that's what I want to leave people with is just be focused on first seeking to understand the other party, understand yourself, really focus on caring about people, and making that relationship more important than certainly the things that you come up on that are disempowering for you. Really put those things aside so that you can have, fruitful relationships. That would be what I want to leave people. That's what I want to leave people with.
Sounds good to me. All right. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me for 45 plus minutes. It was a pleasure, Ron.
I enjoyed it. Thank you for having me, Carol. It was awesome. Great questions.
All right. Well, you take care, and I'll definitely see you out in the Twitterverse.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Okay, bye-bye.